Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play Jack Juggler. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio recording. It has all the text but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes or cuts, so it's not perfect and we may change the take for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait a week or two for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the episode's future up the podcast list and listen to that first. Seriously, this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. If you're still listening, however, let's enter Spoilerland.
Spoilers!
Really gotta change that. Okay. Jack Juggler was written by someone and printed sometime in the early 1560s and performed by children somewhere, probably sometime before that. We're continuing our progress through the play with the introduction of the character Jenkin Caraway, lines 192 to 330 in every edition I have. Before this speech, there's the prologue and a speech by the title character Jack Juggler. And if there is a challenge for a modern performance, it's that we have three opening speeches. I don't really believe the prologue would survive in a modern production, but even then, a modern audience will spend a lot of time going, "Oh, get on with it," which is a shame because both opening speeches have a lot going for them. It's just the fact that you have so many one after the other that gets possibly a little wearing. Jack Juggler has previously painted a picture of his victim, and now we get to meet him. Caraway will now similarly paint a picture of the other characters in the play at greater length. He enters having just come from his little bout of street gambling. Go to the previous spoilers episode if you want to know about that, as related by Jack, and he has lost everything.
Sir! Oh, may I say I have been at a feast. I have lost 2 shillings and 6 pence at the least.
Marry, sir, if this gains I need make no boast, but...
But, true to his name, he turns his frown upside down.
My name
Forget
is Caraway.
About your troubles.
Let all sorrow pass. I will, ere tomorrow night, be as rich as ever I was, or at the furthest within a day. Or twain. My master's purse shall pay me again. Therefore, ho, Caraway, now will I sing. Hey, hey!
But then he remembers that he's not just in trouble for his incurred debts. He should have run an errand to fetch his mistress and has got distracted.
But by the Lord, now I remember another thing. Oh, by me faith, Jenkin, my mistress and thou are like to agree, God knoweth how, that thou comest not for her incontinent to bring her to supper when thou wast sent.
How will Caraway solve this problem? He is in deep doo-doo.
And now they have all supped. Thou wilt surely abide, except thou imagine some pretty and crafty lie.
Of course, he'll think of a lie to tell. And in part, to justify this lie, he paints a picture of how awful his mistress is.
For she is, as all other women be, a very cursed shrew by the blessed Trinity, and a very devil. For if she once begin to fight or chide, in a week she will not lin.
This goes on for a while, and you can debate the representation of women in the early modern period in your own time. It's not great,
moved,
I think is the
but
basic
not lightly
idea.
Appeased.
Oh, no, no, he's still going, actually.
We used to call her, at home, Dame Coy.
And once he's done, he moves on to the maid, another woman who he unfairly maligns. It's a massive attack on a character called Alison Trip and Go, his nemesis in the servants' quarters, on whom there is a lot to say later. But for now, here's a word portrait of her.
And a maid we have at home, Alison Trip and Go. Not all London can show such other two. She simpereth, She pranketh and jetteth without fail, as a peacock that has spread and showeth her gay tail.
And
she minceth,
oh, no, no,
she rideleth,
still going.
She swimmeth to and fro,
no, he's still
she
going.
Treadeth not one.
He actually attacks her for even longer than his mistress.
Lying girl.
Oh no, here's the crux.
But when she may some ill tale by me tell, she will, I warrant you, anon at the first of me imagine, and so the worst. And whatsoever she to my mistress doth say, it is written in the gospel of the same day.
Whatever Alice Trippengoes says to his mistress will be gospel. So he has to have one hell of an excuse to counter her entirely accurate damnations of his character. And therefore, he has to devise his story.
Therefore, I will here with myself devise what I may best say, and in what wise I may excuse this my long tarrying, that she of my negligence may suspect nothing.
So he thinks for a bit. And, no, he's got it. He's got a great plan.
Let me study this month, and I shall not find a better device than now has come to my mind.
And it may be a great plan, but it's a sod to get across. Okay, live on stage with space and physicality, this bit of storytelling shouldn't be too difficult to get. We're going to struggle to make it clear as audio, because Caraway is going to tell the audience what he is going to tell his mistress, during which speech to his mistress in the future, he's telling a fictional account of things that haven't happened in the past to excuse his lateness. You with me? Good. It's difficult to follow, so we're going to go through it slowly.
Mistress, will I say, I am bound by my duty to see that your womanhood have no injury, for I hear and see more than you now and then, and yourself partly know the wanton wiles of men.
He plans to set up his master as the excuse for his lateness. He knows Dame Coy is suspicious of his activities. He's out there womanizing, in theory. Caraway's fiction unfolds thus.
When we came yonder, there did I see, my master kiss gentlewomen two or three. And to come among others, methought I see, he had a marvellous great fantasy.
He's planning to tell his mistress that his master was out with other women.
Anon, he commanded me to run thence for you, to come sup there if you would, but...
Oh, that part is actually true. He was told to fetch her. But here's the excuse why he didn't.
My heart grudged, mistrusting, lest that I, being away, my master would some light cast play.
He didn't want to leave his master in the company of other women, see? He intends to tell his mistress, I had your best interests at heart.
Whereupon, mistress, to see the end, oh, I tarried half supper time, so God me mend.
He had to stay honest.
At last, when I thought it time and season, I came to certify you as it was reason.
And now Caraway makes the story even more complicated, which will be his downfall later on.
And by the way, whom should I meet but that most honest gentleman in the street, which the last week was with you here, and made you a banquet and bouncing cheer.
So she has a lover or admirer of her own, possibly, maybe only a minor flirtation from a distance, but it's intimated that possibly there's something more serious going on. And Caraway chooses this because he knows about it, so he pretends he's bumped into this admirer and recommended he visit her, because when the husband is away, they could play.
Ah, Jenkin,
quoth he,
good speed, how farest thou?
Marry, well, God yield it you, master, quod I. How do you?
How doth thy mistress? Is she at home?
Yea, sir, quod I, and suppeth all alone, and but she hath no manner good cheer. I am sure she would gladly have you there.
This entirely fictitious encounter with presumably an actual person is cemented with a love token, the fetching of which delayed Caraway further.
I cannot come now, said he. I have business, but thou shalt carry a token from me to thy mistress. Go with me to my chamber at Yon Lane, and I will a dish of custards unto her send.
The love token they went for being an apple, a costard, which he'd stolen earlier, and can end his presentation to his mistress with a flourish, pulling an apple from his sleeve. Is this an Adam and Eve reference? Possibly that's going too far. He just had the prop to hand.
I followed him and was bowled by your leave to receive and bring them here in my sleeve.
Now, to close this future story he plans to tell his mistress, he has to make sure that she won't tell anyone the story herself, because then he'll be found out. So...
Oh, but I would not for all England, by Jesus Christ, that my master Bongrace here of Whistle knew that I should any such gear to you bring, lest he misdeem us both in some worse thing, nor show him nothing of that I before said, for then indeed I am arrayed.
All of which is true. If she tells his story, it will fall apart under scrutiny. But if she keeps quiet and doesn't beat him...
If you do, I may nothing hereafter unto you tell, whether I see my master do ill or well. But if you now this counsel keep, I will ease you, perchance twice in a week. You may say you were sick, and your head did ache, that you lusted not this night any supper make, specially without the doors, but thought it best to abide at home and take your rest. And I will to my master to bring him home, for you know he will be angry if he come alone.
Basically, don't tell anyone, and I'll act as broker so that your lover can come and visit you whenever you like. It's a complicated household, isn't it? Master Bongrace might not be actually out visiting women this evening, but it seems likely he might on others, and Dame Coy isn't really any better. Anyway, the story he plans to tell is done, and he's mightily pleased with it.
Yes, this will I say, and face it so well, that she shall believe it every day.
And then Caraway goes off on one about the need for servants to be good at lying. But then there's a moment where it might be he feels the delayed ear-burning of Jack Juggler's earlier speech about him, as though he senses that trouble is a-coming.
But I promise you I do ghastly fear, for I feel a vengeable burning in my left ear. And it hath been a saying of time long that sweet meat will have sour sauce among, and surely I shall have some ill hap, for my hair standeth up under me cap.
Or maybe he's afraid that his story will not be believed, and is delaying his knocking at his own door because he knows he'll probably be beaten.
I would knock! Oh, but I dare not, by Our Lady! I fear hanging. We're into no manners hasty.
He goes to the door. He goes away again. Can he pluck up the courage to knock? Does he know his lie well enough to be getting on with?
But seeing there is no other remedy, thus to stand any longer, it is but folly.
In the end, he bites the bullet and knocks on the door, but then, from out the shadows, Jack Juggler appears, dressed just like him. And then the fun really begins. The setup is over. Now the play can start. But that's for the next episode. The full production will be coming later in the month. The next episode of Spoilers, however, will cover the big scene of the play, the set-piece battle between our victim Jenkin Caraway and Jack Juggler. Or Jenkin Caraway 2. That'll be lines 331 to 637. But till then, here's the plain text of Caraway. Performed by Simon Nader.
Sir, I may say I have been at a feast. I have lost 2 shillings and 6 pence at the least.
Marry, sir, if this gains I need make no boast, but the devil go with all, more have I lost. My name is Caraway. Let all sorrow pass. I will, ere tomorrow night, be as rich as ever I was, or at the furthest within a day, or twain. My master's purse shall pay me again. Therefore, ho, care away, now will I sing. Hey, hey! But by the Lord, now I remember another thing. Oh, by me faith, Jenkin, my mistress and thou are like to agree, God knoweth how, that thou comest not for her incontinent to bring her to supper when thou wast sent. And now they have all supped. Thou wilt surely abide, except thou imagine some pretty and crafty life, for she is, as all other women be, a very cursed shrew by the blessed Trinity, and a very devil. For if she once begin to fight or chide, in a week she will not lin. And a great pleasure she hath, specially now of late, to get poor me now and then by the pate, for she is an angry piece of flesh, and soon displeased, quickly moved, but not lightly appeased. We used to call her, at home, Dame Coy, a pretty gingerly piece, God save her and Saint Lawyers, dainty and nice as a halfpenny worth of silver spoons, but vengeful melancholy in the afternoons. She useth for her bodily health and safeguard to chide daily one fit to supper word, and my master himself is worse than she if he once thoroughly angered be. And a maid we have at home, Alison Trip and Go. Not all London can show such other two. She simpereth, she pranketh, and jetteth without fail, as a peacock that hath spread and showeth her gay tail. She minceth, she bridleth, she swimmeth to and fro. She treadeth not one hair awry. She trippeth like a doe abroad in the street, going or coming homeward. She quavereth and warbleth like one in a galliard, every joint in her body and every part. Ooh, it is a jolly wench to mince and divide a fart. Ha! She talketh, she chatteth like a pie all day, and speaketh like a parrot popping jay, and that as fine as a small silken thread, yea, and as high as an eagle can fly for need. But it is a spiteful, lying girl, and never well. But when she may some ill tale by me tell, she will, I warrant you, anon at the first of me imagine, and so the worst. And whatsoever she to my mistress doth say, it is written in the gospel of the same day. Therefore, I will here with myself devise what I may best say, and in what wise I may excuse this, my long tarrying, that she of my negligence may suspect nothing. For if the fault of this be found in me, I may give my life for halfpennies three. What do I say? What do I say? Let me study this month, and I shall not find a better device than now is come to my mind. Mistress, will I say, I am bound by my duty to see that your womanhood have no injury, for I hear and see more than you now and then, and yourself partly know the wanton wiles of men. When we came yonder, there did I see, my master kissed gentlewomen two or three, and to come among others, methought I see he had a marvellous great fantasy. Anon, he commanded me to run thence for you, to come sup there if you would, but, oh, I wot not how. My heart grudged, mistrusting, lest that I, being away, my master would some light cast play, whereupon mistress to see the end. Oh, I tarried half supper time, so God me mend. And besides that, there was such other company as I know your mistress-ship setteth nothing by. Gorgeous dames of the court, and gallants also, with doctors and other rufflers, Mo. At last, when I thought it time and season, I came to certify you as it was reason. And by the way, whom should I meet but that most honest gentleman in the street, which the last week was with you here, and made you a banquet and bouncing cheer?
Oh. Ah, Jenkin, quoth he. Good speed, how farest thou?
Marry, well, God yield it you, master, quod I. How do you?
How doth thy mistress? Is she at home?
Yea, sir, quod I, and suppeth all alone, and but she hath no manner good cheer. I am sure she would gladly have you there.
I cannot come now, said he. I have business, but thou shalt carry a token from me to thy mistress. Go with me to my chamber at yon lane, and I will a dish of costards unto her send.
I followed him, and was bold by your leave to receive and bring them here in my sleeve. Oh, but I would not for all England, by Jesus Christ, that my master Bongrace here of Whistle knew that I should any such gear to you bring, lest he misdeem us both in some worse thing, nor show him nothing of that I before said, for then indeed I am arrayed. If you do, I may nothing hereafter unto you tell, whether I see my master do ill or well. But if you now this counsel keep, I will ease you, perchance twice in a week. You may say you were sick, and your head did ache, that you lusted not this night any supper make, specially without the doors, but thought it best to abide at home and take your rest. And I will to my master to bring him home, for you know he will be angry if he come alone.
Yes, this will I say, and face it so well, that she shall believe it every day. How say you, friends, by the arms of Robin Hood, will not this excuse be reasonable good?
To muse for any better great folly it is.
For I may make sure reckoning of this, that, and if I would sit stewing this 7 years, I shall not else find how to save me all clear. And, as you see, for the most part, our wits be best when we be taken most unreadiest. But I will not give for that boy a fly that hath not all times in store one good lie, and cannot set a good face upon the same. Therefore, St. George the borrow as it will let him frame. I will jeopard a joint, be as be may. I have had many like chances before this day, but I promise you I do ghastly fear, for I feel a vengeable burning in my left ear. And it hath been a saying of time long that sweet meat will have sour sauce among, and surely I shall have some ill hap, for my hair standeth up under me cap. I would knock, but I dare not, by our lady. I fear hanging. We're unto no manners hasty. But seeing there is no other remedy, thus to stand any longer, it is but folly. Oh, they be so far within, I cannot hear.